Pabst Brewing, supporting live music and local artists nationwide and proud supporter of NPR Music Podcasts at PabstBlueRibbon.com.
From NPR Music, you're connected to a special edition of All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. What we have in store for you is a real treat. Just a few weeks ago, I got a call from the good folks at Burge Records. They mentioned that M. Ward would be in New York City on the day of his CD release, and he wanted to do something special for his fans. They asked, could you think of something fun to do? So we found M. Ward a beautiful performance studio at NPR member station WNYC in New York City. And our host for the evening is Alana Harper. Hi, Alana.
Hi.
So let me just tell folks that during M. Ward's performance, we have a chat room open, which you must know about because it's on the same page. And you can chat amongst yourselves about the performance, about times you've seen Matt Ward and so forth. But what we're really looking for during the performance are thoughtful questions that you put into the chat room. And when Matt's done with the performance, we'll ask some of those questions. And we've done this before with Animal Collective, and we did it before with Andrew Bird. And really great questions from our listeners. We have a bunch of smart, wonderful listeners. So, Alana, I assume Matt's there in the studio with you, yeah?
Yes, he's sitting here, guitar in hand, I think pretty ready to go.
Well, why don't you take it away? Good to have you, Matt.
Nice to be here.
Great.
Matt, first thing that I want to ask you is, with this new album that just came out today, did you have a theme in mind when you sat down to write songs, record it?
The theme sort of comes together over a good amount of time. All the songs are written on my four track at home, and I collect these songs over years, and so when it comes time to make a record, it's a matter of collecting songs that I've written over the last 10 years or so, and finding songs that seem to fit together. And after recording the first song, it's a song called Hold Time, that sort of gave me some idea of the production ideas I wanted to follow.
And what are you going to be playing for us tonight?
I'm going to be playing a few new songs and a couple old songs.
Okay, great. I think we're all excited to hear, especially the new stuff. Do you want to go ahead and get started?
Let's do it.
Okay, awesome.
This river that we ride has always been alive. Oh, my soul, 100 million years. This river that we ride will roll on when we die. Oh, my soul, 100 million years. And this love between you and I is older than that burning ball of fire up in the sky, and the gale that fills our sail. And the lights that shine tonight have always been alive. Oh, my soul, 100 million years. Yeah, the lights that shine tonight, they will burn on when we die. Oh, my soul, 100 million years. And this love between you and I is older than that burning ball of fire up in the sky and the gale that fills our sail. Yeah, this love between you and I is older than that burning ball of fire up in the sky, and the gale that fills our sail. You were beyond comprehension tonight, but I understood. I understood. Now if only I could hold time, hold time, hold time. And words have failed me tonight, failed me tonight. But you knew what I meant. You knew what I meant. You heard what I said the whole time, the whole time, the whole time. And I wrote this song about it, 'cause I didn't care about any worthless photograph. Yeah, I wrote this song just to remember the endless, endless summer in your life. Endless summer in your life. I sailed a wild, wild sea, climbed up a tall, tall mountain. I met an old, old man. He sat beneath a sapling tree. He said, now if you got some questions, go and lay them at my feet. But my time here is brief, so you'll have to pick just three. And I said, what do you do with the pieces of a broken heart? On how can a man like me remain in the light? On if life is really as short as they say, then why is the night so long? And then the sun went down and he sang for me this song. Thank you. He said, I once was a young man like you, afraid to do the things that I knew I had to do. So I played an escapade just like you. Yeah, I played an escapade just like you. Oh, I sailed a wild sea, climbed up a tall mountain. I met an old man. He sat beneath a sapling tree. He said, now if you got some questions, go and lay them at my feet. But my time here is brief, and so you'll have to pick just three. And I said, what do you do with the pieces of a broken heart? Oh, and how can a man like me remain in the light? Oh, and if life is really as short as they say, then why is the night so long? And then the sun went down and he played for me this song. Since time out of mind, I've been lazy. In times before that, I was cruel. In times before that, I was mean, I was mad. Honey, I ain't never had nobody like you. And the times before that, well, I was crazy. I saw the dark side of the moon. And the stars in the sky, they never caught my eye. Cause I had never had nobody like you. I never had nobody like you. But now it's just like ABC. Life's just like 1, 2, 3. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. I watched my old habits die, and it was painful. Sometimes it's painful in the light of the truth. But you kept me fast to the right, and I want to thank you tonight. Honey, I ain't never had nobody like you. No, I ain't never had nobody like you. Now life's just like ABC. life's just like one, two, three. Yeah, 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 yeah. Uh-huh. I trusted liars and thieves in my blindness. Honey, I was wasting away at the root. But now that I've been through that hell, oh, I got a story to tell. Honey, I ain't never had nobody like you. No, I ain't never had nobody like you. People come, people go. Sometimes without goodbye, sometimes without hello. I got one magic trick, just a one, and that's it. Ooh, I disappear. It's like a now you see me, now you don't. You think you're gonna get to know me now, well you won't. I got one magic trick, just a one, and that's it. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I disappear. Sometimes without goodbye, sometimes without hello. I got one magic trick, just the one, and that's it. Ooh, I disappear.
Matt, that was great. Thank you so much. If you're just joining us, we are live from the WNYC studios in New York City, and we're joined with M. Ward, who is just finished, rather, performing a few songs, mostly new, some old. The new songs coming from his latest album, Hold Time. And what we're actually going to move on to now is... sitting and talking with Matt a little bit. The point of all of this, of course, is to take your questions, listeners, from the chat room for the All Songs Considered live chat. So we would encourage you to post all sorts of questions, and we will be feeding them to Matt and talking with him for a while. First off, I'm going to get us started with something that I was curious about. You've collaborated with tons of different artists. What do those experiences, how do they enlighten when you sit down to make a solo album?
Well, I don't, you know, you pick, mainly my records are made
using friends of mine who live in Portland, and sometimes we'll get talented singers from other parts of the world to contribute, you know. And it's just a matter of listening to the song and trying to figure out what's the best idea to follow.
You moved to Portland, how many years ago? Was it 7 or?
2000.
2000? And did you move there specifically for the music scene?
No, not at all. I started recording my first record, and just fell in love with the city, and I haven't left since.
I read in an article, I think it maybe was the recent New York Times article, that Portland is a very easy city, a very livable city for musicians.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still a pretty cheap place to live, and a lot of people are moving there and, playing music and doing whatever sort of creative arts they want to, I guess.
Do you find that being in Portland, it's easier to, I guess, operate in the community of musicians?
I guess so. I don't think about it too much. I just have this great community of friends, and I'm not really that in touch with the Portland music scene, even though a lot of people ask me about it. But I just have a really strong group of friends there.
We'd love to go ahead and take some questions from the chat room. Bob, is there anything you'd like to start us off with?
Well, your questions, a couple of them, dealt with collaborations. We have a few, one from Alexandra, another from Mark. Alexandra wants to know, she says, first, sounding great, Matt. I'd like to know if collaborating with Zoe in your She and Him project was at all influential on your solo album. And then there's another, well, let's do that first.
Well, her influence is definitely on the record. She sings on a few songs on the new record, and she's an incredible vocalist, and she's, you know, obviously very talented at layering vocals, and so that definitely is that influence is definitely on the new record.
The one thing that I guess making more and more records and having more and more fans affords you is the ability to call someone up like Lucinda Williams and say, "Hey, you wanna? I hear you in my head. Can you come sing on my song?" Right?
Absolutely. Oh, it's an incredible thrill. I've been a huge fan of hers since I was in high school, and yeah, what an incredible thrill.
So Mark wants to know, he's thinking, I guess he's putting himself in your head. He wants to know if maybe Richard Thompson might be in your future, or Devendra Banhart, or Zach Condon of Beirut, or maybe you want to expand on any, either of those, or other people that when you write a song that you might think about in your head.
Yeah, you know, future collaborations, they always happen by accident. Lucinda Williams was the first one who I went out and asked to, you know, sort of went out on a limb to invite to duet, and I'm very happy how it turned out, and I guess it's just a matter of listening to, you know, whatever song you're working on, and sort of just following your instincts.
I'll do one more on the collaboration. This one's from Bob Boylan, which is I've seen you play
Hi,
with
Bob.
I've seen you play with Jim James, and heard you play with Connor, and then there's one more in that little dream team of yours. Who am I thinking about? There's 1, 2, 3. There's 4 of you. So the Monsters of Folk thing that you did, what, 4 or 5 years ago. You with me on that at all?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, I'd heard rumors of plans for something more definite, that you'd get together. Who's the fourth voice? I'm slipping my mind.
Oh, Mike Mogus.
Mike Mogus, thank you.
Mike Mogus, Connor and Jim and I are very slowly but surely working on a new record, and yeah, we're really excited about where it's going, even though we don't exactly know where it's going exactly because it's such a new project. But yeah, we've been, you know, friends for a long time, and we've been playing live here and there over the last few years, and this is our first time trying to make a record. So it's tricky because we're all doing different things and normally in different places of the country, and but yeah, we're excited about collaboration.
Yeah, a little like planet alignment, just getting just right to get you all in the same place at the same time.
It's definitely a not an easy thing to arrange.
Here's one from Stervenson, is the person's name. He says, "When I listen to your records, I'm reminded of Brian Wilson's desire on Pet Sounds to sing in such a way to make the listener feel loved. How does one do that? Is it just a hokey drug talk," he says, "or is there something to it?" And somebody's got their headphones up a little loud, so the voices are bouncing back. If you can just take care of that. Thanks.
It's a very good question. I don't entirely know the answer to it. I'll have to think about that one.
Evan asks, he says, there's a lot of religious references in the lyrics on the new record. Can you tell me about what brought that about in your creative process?
Well, the first music I ever heard was old hymns, and I have a great amount of reverence for those songs, yeah, it comes through in unpredictable ways.
Let's see, we have an unknown user wanted to know how you stole Rachel Blumberg away from the Decemberists as a drummer over to you.
boy, that's a good question too. Rachel is an incredibly versatile drummer, and she drums for lots of different artists. And as a matter of fact, she's in Australia right now with Jolie Holland, and I think she thrives off of you know, working with completely different sounds and songs.
Michael was wondering, what inspired you to go with that Chinese painting, and where on that monumental vertical mountain do you think you currently reside? Could you explain what that means to anyone? Thanks, Michael.
Well, I saw the image in the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, and then read an article later on about it in the New York Times, and I think it you know, I knew that I wanted a very old image on the cover, and I guess you know, sometimes you're in a museum and something speaks to you, and this seemed like something that was a very universal and beautiful picture, and I'm, you know, thrilled that they gave us permission to use it on the record.
If I miss this, I'm sorry, because I'm reading and listening. Did you say who the artist was, or it's a?
Yeah. How do I pronounce it?
Okay.
It's Chinese, and I think. I don't want to butcher it.
Okay.
The best thing would be to look on the liner notes.
I love it.
Yeah. My Chinese is not, you know, it's...
And then it gets mixed up with the Portland accent.
Never what it should be.
It's just not going to come out right.
Exactly.
So, Alana, do you have anything you want to inject? I'm still looking at a good list of stuff here.
Sure. Actually, I wanted to go back to... when you mentioned Lucinda Williams, you did the cover of Oh, Lonesome Me. Did you know that you wanted to do that cover with her before you approached her, or did you choose it after?
It just happened during the production. I started hearing her voice in the song, and I just thought, wouldn't it be great if, and just such a thrill that she said yes, because I had never met her before, and she's just, yeah, incredibly talented.
Did you come to that song through Neil Young, Hank Williams, Don Gibson? What version of that song did?
I first heard it on a Neil Young record, yeah. And then later on a Don Gibson record, and it just seems like one of those songs that's going to be around forever. And I think it's you know, able to be interpreted in a million different ways, and I think that we did a production that isn't already out there. Maybe it is, but. I have never heard it.
There's a hard thing to do, which is to take a song like Rave On, you do that on your new record, you take this song too, and put your own stamp on it. I mean, I think of O Lonesome Me, and I think of, as a Neil Young song. Other people think of it as Don Gibson. I guess it depends on who you heard it first. But putting your stamp on a song, how do you take something, an unanswerable question maybe, but how do you take something that's so familiar to people and then put a stamp on it on a song like take Rave On, for example, and not, you know, only hear Buddy Holly?
I think it comes from just covering just dozens and dozens of songs, learning hundreds of songs and certain ones just, you know, it's one of those unexplainable things, like a square peg going through a square hole. It just fits.
I'll ask more questions from the chat room. I have just one more. I played on a recent show a cut from the Buddy Holly apartment tapes. Do you know those tapes?
I've read about them, but I haven't heard them.
Because there's a new collection out that really does fairly good justice to those recordings. So these are recordings Buddy Holly did in an apartment in New York City. You know, eventually they came out with heavy production, lots of background vocals and all that stuff. But if you listen to them, I think of the people who should hear this, because they'll love it so much, not because you'll want to copy it, but because you'll appreciate it so much. Just Buddy Holly in a New York apartment singing with his guitar. It's just brilliant stuff. There's a new collection, so just a tip. Let's see, questions from the audience. And so you've talked a bit about this before, which is Andy wants to know how you build up these tracks. You have original four-track recordings you do on an analog cassette recorder, and then you take them to a big studio. And he's asking, does a change come in the studio? Does a change come in collaborating with other musicians? So what goes on here?
You know, I wish there was a formula or, you know, a specific process of how it gets built, but every single one is different. So it's hard to comment on that part of the process. The only thing I can say is that they all start off with, you know, solo four track and time. And, you sit on these tapes for, months, sometimes years. And, if a good amount of time has gone by and it still sounds good to you, those are the songs that you begin to work on. It's never a process of, oh, I just wrote this song yesterday, I'm going to take it to the studio and record it. I know a lot of people are, you know, can do that and do it really well, but I can't.
When you go back and you hear those things, maybe a recording that you laid down one late night, and you pull out your drawer of four-track tapes getting ready for your next record, does some of the stuff surprise you? Does it feel like it's somebody else doing it?
Sure, yeah. Sometimes in good ways and sometimes in bad ways and, you know, embarrassing ways. And the embarrassing ones, you know, you just sort of put those back into the pile of manure and it eventually turns into something else.
Mr. Unknown User wants to know if you write in a journal or you have random scraps of paper, or have you ever thought of writing short stories or a book?
I've tried to write things that are longer than a song, but I never seem to. I don't think I have that kind of organization. Maybe someday I will. I like the idea that a record can be as satisfying as a book. So I guess I'm constantly trying to merge those two.
Your wife is a writing professor, correct? Mm-hmm. What kind of writing does she do?
All kinds. A lot of it is helping other students with their writing.
Have you found that her own work that she does, does it influence your songwriting?
The biggest influence on my music is mainly older records, and that's probably the biggest influence.
And we actually have a number of questions about that sort of stuff, because My guess is that you probably like listening to records that are older than your contemporaries, or well, obviously, the music that's from a different era, I would probably best say. And Sarah wants to know what LPs you're listening to recently. And then JD, maybe these wind up together. JD said, Matt, would you say you draw more from contemporary influences these days, or do you find roots of rock a better place and a better starting ground to explore?
For some reason, I have very little patience for digital technology, so that only gives me a certain window of musical entertainment. There's definitely a lot of stuff that's been recorded on digital that I enjoy, but I guess that would be the short answer to that question. I guess when I hear digital recording, it just sounds like a sketch to me. It doesn't sound like a finished product. And
well, what about the music itself? If put the technology aside and say, just in terms of the songwriting, the song form, the sorts of poetry, the things that people are singing about, and the subjects that they bring to the table in their words, is it still old versus new for you?
Well. You can't help but be influenced by everything around you and the music that your friends are making. And that's definitely present, but the biggest influence comes from these older records and older production styles and older guitar styles.
Oh, we've got a number of questions about guitars. I think this is inevitable for someone who plays guitar like you, so I hope you don't mind answering a couple of questions. What kind of guitars do you play? That's one of the questions from Mrs. Unknown User. And then what kind of... and what's with the open D6 tuning, if that doesn't get too esoteric?
Right. Well, I guess it was maybe about... maybe 8 or 9 years ago that I started experimenting with tunings. And I think the first people that I was listening to who were using alternate tunings were people like Joni Mitchell and Thurston Moore and Lee Rinaldo. And that was really exciting for me when I was younger, and it still is, to basically reinvent the guitar when you change even one string, you start to your hands start to land on chords and harmonies that you are more unpredictable, and so that's just a never ending joy.
So one of the things, what you're sort of saying, if I'll just reinterpret, which is that the different tunings, you'll find different songs inside of the tunings as you start to play. Yes.
Yeah. When I first started playing guitar, I didn't know any chords. I didn't know the names of any of the chords. And that was kind of an exciting time because you, write songs completely by accident and you end up with melodies by accident. And that's a good place to be rather than... The falling into any kind of predictable rut.
And somebody keeps asking and wants to know just in particular about not your left hand, Matt, but they want to know about your right hand. and because I think it's an astonishing playing, and maybe you can just talk about what goes on when you're playing with that right hand and the sort of techniques that you use. Or... do you think about
it? If you think about it, normally that's when bad things happen. I guess I was there's a guitar player named John Fahey that I discovered probably 10 years ago, and that inspired me to play less with a pick and more with using fingers and trying to create bass and treble and rhythm at the same time. And that, I guess that if I had to point at something that was the impulse, it would be his record.
We have Matt from a user named Solace. Any chance you'll ever release a fully instrumental album or possibly a score to a film, which actually you did. Isn't that how you met Zoe?
I did, yeah. There was a film called The Go-Getter that came out last year. I guess maybe there's an instrumental record someday. I guess I feel that that's something that's been done, and I for some strange reason I'm more interested in trying to have records with different set of rules.
I thought Andrew Burgess did something kind of interesting, which is he made a record, put it out. It's a, you know, a song record, but then he made a bonus 2-record set, which has is a full disc that comes along with it of instrumental tunes unrelated to, you know, the songs that wound up on the record for the most part. And it's just a nice way to do it. It makes it so that you're not saying, "Oh, here's my instrumental album." It's a little bit of it's deflected by the fact that the main albums are the song albums, and then there's this. It's kind of more like a bonus than a out and outright. Here's my album, and you're not going to hear anything more from me for a year, and all it's going to be is this instrumental thing. You know. Anyway, just thought it was a nice idea that that he did. Someone wants to know how the next She and Him record is coming.
It's coming slowly. We're in the demo stage, and if I had to guess when it's going to be out, I'd probably say 2010. But we'll be working on it in 2009. Yeah, and we're very excited about it.
Few more. You game for a little bit more? How you doing?
Sure.
You just came from the Letterman show, right?
I did.
How'd that go?
It went great. Good. It's always a blast.
So we get to hear that and see that tonight. Is it really a blast? I mean, do you even get a sense of even getting comfortable before you're done?
It's fun because it's just so surreal. Television is just so surreal.
You said you don't really watch that much television, right?
I don't.
But the Twin Peaks series was...
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, collect DVDs or anything. That's Twin Peaks is the only DVDs that I own.
And as far as like, have something to do with that spooky music.
Yeah. DVDs. Yeah, and I love Angelo Badalamenti. He's obviously one of the greatest.
The song Outro on your record, which isn't the last cut, which struck me. The song Outro has that nice, creepy, gorgeous feel to it. That his music does as well. Brendan wants to know, he says, this album has a lot more to it instrumentally. What changed in your approach for Whole Time compared to older albums like Post-War or Transfiguration of Vincent?
Well, there's so many things. But the biggest thing is probably experimenting with more orchestral instruments and not wanting them to get carried away, and using these richer instruments just tempering them so that you don't end up with songs that are overly rich. So it's a matter of balancing those out with sounds that are less rich and thinner.
Someone says that they had a question. The person's name was Matt. They said, "Hi, Matt. Question about the first and third tracks, which are amazing on the new album. Why so happy? They both sound like songs to be played over the happy resolution of a romantic film."
I feel like there's happy songs on all the records I've put out, but I guess I feel like there should be a balance between happy and sad and bright and dark in the songs and within every record. I guess I've never felt like any of the records have been lopsided one way or the other, but everyone is is entitled to their own opinion.
For folks, we'll put this up online for you to hear again for those who might have missed the beginning of the performance. You're about to embark on a tour for this brilliant, wonderful record, coming to a city near me for sure. Where else are you going? You're coming definitely to Washington next weekend, this coming weekend.
Yeah. we're going to be on the East Coast this week, a little bit of Europe week after that, on the West Coast the week after that, and then taking a break and then going out doing Coachella and doing a bit of the Midwest.
And who's the we? Who's in the band?
It's a guy named Scott McPherson, a guy named Mike Kirkendall, a guy named Nathan Anderson, and a guy named Adam Selzer.
Okay. Thanks for doing this. I'll turn this over to Alana.
This broadcast has come to you from our studios here at WNYC, New York Public Radio. The technical director for this broadcast was Ed Haber. Our producer was Alex Ambrose. Our web coordinator was Brad Cresswell. WNYC's executive producer for music is Lamora Tomer. For WNYC Radio and the NPR Music team, I'm Alana Harper. Thanks for joining us.